Right now, as you're listening to this, there's a real chance that a piece of code might just be autonomously reading your emails,
yep.
scanning your calendar, and, you know, silently preparing a briefing for your Monday morning meeting.
All without you even asking it to.
Exactly, without you even asking. And at the exact same time, another piece of code could be sitting completely dormant on your computer, having just slipped past one of the biggest corporate security walls in the entire world.
It's a wild time.
It really is. So, welcome to today's deep dive. We are looking at this massive stack of news from the Tech in Tech report.
Right, the June 3, 2026 edition.
Yeah, that's the one. And it is just, I mean, it's one of those jam-packed days of news that perfectly captures this massive turning point in technology.
It really does.
So, okay, let's unpack this. Our mission today is to connect the dots on a rapidly shifting artificial intelligence landscape.
And there is a lot to cover.
There is. Yeah. We're going to explore how AI is, well, testing the absolute limits of corporate law, for starters, how it's sparking this huge privacy rebellion among everyday iPhone users.
Which is fascinating.
Totally. And how it's transforming into these autonomous digital coworkers, and then terrifyingly creating some massive new cybersecurity blind spots.
Yeah. And, you know, on the surface, these might seem like completely disparate updates. I mean, a court ruling here, an app surge there.
Right. They feel random.
Exactly. They feel random. But when you synthesize them, they all point to one underlying critical theme.
Which is?
It's the struggle for control in this new AI-driven era. I mean, we are watching a real-time battle over who controls the data, who controls the workflow, and ultimately,
who's responsible when things break.
Precisely. Who takes the blame?
Which brings us right into the first battleground. And this one is happening in the courtroom.
The Musk lawsuit.
Yeah, we have a massive update on that ongoing antitrust lawsuit. The one where Elon Musk's XAI is suing Apple and OpenAI.
Right. And the core allegation there is that Apple is basically playing favorites.
Yeah. They're integrating OpenAI's ChatGPT directly into iOS at the system level, while allegedly shutting out Musk's Grok AI.
Like preventing it from getting equal access.
Right. But the new development here is that U.S. District Judge Mark Pittman just denied XAI's request to shield Elon Musk's business emails.
Specifically his emails from his other companies.
Yes. Tesla and SpaceX. In the legal discovery process.
And this procedural ruling carries massive, massive strategic implications for anyone running a multi-layered corporate empire.
How so?
Well, Musk's legal team was arguing that Tesla and SpaceX are completely separate corporate entities.
Sure, different boards, different shareholders.
Exactly, meaning their internal emails shouldn't be dragged into a fight about an iPhone operating system.
I mean, I want to make sure we really understand the weight of this. It's kind of like, okay, think of it like this. If you own a bakery, a mechanic shop, and a tech startup.
Okay.
If someone sues the tech startup, they usually can't just demand to look at the bakery's receipts.
Right, that wouldn't make sense.
But the judge here is essentially saying, wait, we have reason to believe you've been using your mechanics to bake the bread.
That is a great way to put it.
Suddenly the walls between your businesses just disappear. But I have to push back a little here, though. I mean, is it actually fair to drag an electric car company and a rocket manufacturer into an Apple and OpenAI dispute?
Well, the court is looking squarely at the reality of modern corporate power, right? Rather than just the paper structure.
Okay.
When one person is the CEO of three major, highly influential companies, the traditional boundaries of a corporation, you know, that corporate veil, it starts to blur.
Ah, I see.
So Judge Pittman's ruling suggests that these emails might contain material evidence, like evidence about cross-company resource sharing that is highly relevant to an antitrust claim.
Meaning, did Musk use Tesla's engineering talent, or, I don't know, maybe its massive Dojo supercomputer compute power to help build XAI's models?
Exactly, because if you're claiming you're being unfairly shut out of a market, the court needs to know exactly what resources you are leveraging to compete in the first place.
Wow. Okay, that makes
sense. That's the crux of the issue. The court wants to know if there's a pattern of hoarding competitive intelligence or using massive leverage from one distinct company to benefit another.
And he was an original co-founder of OpenAI, too.
Right. So Musk's historical emails across all his accounts might reveal early strategic discussions or partnership negotiations with Apple that directly inform the current lawsuit.
So we're really seeing the judicial system grapple with tech moguls who operate these sprawling empires.
Empires that intersect across multiple industries.
Exactly. And we shouldn't forget the broader context here, too. Just last month, so May 26, Musk had a separate lawsuit against OpenAI dismissed.
The big one.
Yeah, the $150 billion lawsuit.
That's a lot of billions.
Right. He was suing them over their transition to a for-profit model, but the jury threw it out because he missed the statute of limitations.
Though he is appealing that, of course.
Of course he is. But you have to wonder, with all these intersecting legal battles, if this discovery process exposes how these different companies coordinate under the hood, I mean, that could be a gold mine for regulators.
Oh, it absolutely opens a Pandora's box.
Yeah.
Think about it. Discovery documents could expose confidential strategic communications that companies usually guard with their lives.
Right.
If there are revelations about market manipulation or resource shifting that wasn't disclosed to shareholders or unfair competitive practices.
Regulators are going to be all over that.
Oh, agencies like the FTC or the Department of Justice are going to be reading those discovery documents very, very closely.
So we have this intense struggle for control over AI dominance happening at the billionaire level.
Yep.
But while Apple and OpenAI are fighting tech billionaires in court over who gets to be the default AI on your phone, everyday iPhone users are quietly staging their own massive rebellion.
And this is perhaps the most telling consumer behavior shift we've seen all year. Yes. It indicates a severe friction point between what tech companies want to build and what users actually want to experience.
The numbers in the Techin report are just staggering. So following Google's I.O. 2026 conference,
where they announced that massive overhaul.
Yeah. The one replacing traditional search results with mandatory AI overviews. Well, DuckDuckGo installs have absolutely exploded.
Just skyrocketed.
We are talking about a 95% surge on U.S. iOS devices compared to their baseline just before the conference.
A 95% surge. That is huge.
DuckDuckGo is currently sitting at the number 3 spot for utility apps on the App Store.
You know, seeing a near doubling of installation rates for a privacy-focused search engine almost overnight, that is not a random anomaly.
No, it can't be.
That represents a sustained behavioral shift from a user base that is actively seeking an alternative.
I mean, I'm looking at this 95% surge, and I have to imagine this isn't just because of that viral blunder where Google's AI told someone to add glue to their pizza.
Oh, the glue on the pizza to keep the cheese from sliding off.
Right. I mean, that's funny, but people don't change a 25-year habit over a single bad recipe.
No, they don't.
This feels like users are realizing that AI overviews don't just summarize the internet. They kind of obscure the sources.
Right.
Is that loss of agency why we're seeing this mass exodus?
You've hit on the psychological core of the issue right there.
Yeah.
For decades, the internet contract was simple, right? You search for a term, the engine provides the classic 10 blue links, and you evaluate the sources yourself.
You decide what's real and what's junk.
Exactly. You decide what is credible and what is garbage. By enforcing mandatory AI overviews, Google's fundamentally altering that contract.
They're changing the deal.
Yes. They are shifting from a retrieval model to an authoritative answer model.
It's like, okay, it's the difference between being handed a menu at a restaurant where you get to pick your meal.
Right.
Versus a waiter just walking up and force feeding you a blended smoothie of what they think you want to eat.
That is a very visceral analogy.
Right. You don't know what's in the smoothie, you don't know who made it, and you certainly didn't ask for it to be blended.
But it perfectly illustrates the loss of control. Users are rejecting being force-fed algorithmic answers.
Absolutely.
They fear the privacy erosion, too, knowing that their behavioral data is being sucked up to train these very AI systems.
Yeah, that's a big part of it.
And they see the increasingly cluttered interfaces. Philosophically, people are realizing they just don't want an AI gatekeeper mediating their access to human knowledge.
Which is exactly what DuckDuckGo offers.
Right. DuckDuckGo's entire value proposition is, we don't build profiles on you and we just give you the links.
The irony is just palpable here.
It really is. Google's aggressive push to maintain its dominance through an AI-first strategy is actively driving its most premium, privacy-conscious iOS users directly into the arms of a competitor.
And even capturing a few percentage points of Google's 91% market share, that's a seismic event in the advertising and tech world.
Oh, absolutely.
It really shows that everyday users still want their hands on the steering wheel when it comes to finding information. But this brings up a fascinating contradiction in user behavior right now.
Oh, you mean the divergence in how we treat consumer AI versus enterprise AI?
Yes. Here's where it gets really interesting. At the exact same time that users are actively rebelling against AI telling them what to read on a search engine,
right,
they are happily handing over the keys for AI to do their actual jobs.
We are witnessing the rapid rise of the digital coworker.
Okay, let's look at the Microsoft Build 2026 conference. Microsoft unveiled Scout.
Scout, yes.
Now, this isn't just another co-pilot that sits inside Microsoft Word waiting for you to highlight a paragraph and ask for a summary.
No, it's much bigger than that.
Scout is a 24/7, always-on AI assistant. It's built on this open-source framework called OpenClaw.
Right.
And it operates across Teams, Outlook, OneDrive. And the quote from Microsoft's VP, Omar Shaheen, really gave me pause.
What did he say?
He said, "Your company essentially hires your assistant."
Wow. That specific language using the word hires is a deliberate and monumental shift in how software is categorized.
But I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around the mechanics of this, though. Like, if I close Microsoft Word, Copilot turns off. It's done.
Right, it goes to sleep.
So how is Scout fundamentally different from the tools we've been using for the last 2 years?
The difference lies in a concept called persistent identity.
Persistent identity.
Yeah. Because Scout is built on the OpenClaw framework, it doesn't live inside a single desktop application. It lives in your cloud environment.
Okay.
So it is awake even when your laptop is completely shut.
Oh, wow.
OpenClaw allows for multi-step reasoning and agentic loops. That means instead of you giving it a step-by-step prompt, you can give it a high-level goal.
Like what? Give me an example.
Like, monitor my email for customer complaints and draft responses based on our policy.
It just does that.
It will continuously check the email, reference the policy document, draft the response, and then just wait for your approval.
That is crazy.
It learns your work style over time, too. You chat with it in Teams just like you would ping a human colleague.
So it's shifting from a reactive tool to a proactive agent.
Exactly.
But before we crown Microsoft the king of the digital office, I have to bring up OpenAI's latest move from the report.
Oh, the new Codex plugins.
Yeah, OpenAI just launched 6 new Codex plugins specifically for white-collar work. We're talking data analytics, investment banking, product design.
Massive industries.
Huge. They have 5 million weekly active users and 110% growth in data analytics. People are using Codex to autonomously build massive spreadsheets and financial models.
It's incredibly powerful.
But wait, isn't Microsoft the biggest investor in OpenAI?
Yes, they are.
How does it work that OpenAI is building plugins that compete directly with Microsoft 365 while Microsoft is building Scout to do the exact same thing?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, what you're observing is a very high-stakes proxy war between strategic partners.
A proxy war.
Yeah. OpenAI is no longer content just supplying the underlying and, you know, the large language models for Microsoft's products.
They want more.
They want to own the application layer. They want the direct, sticky relationship with the 5 million knowledge workers who are using Codex every single day.
So they're building the entire car now, not just selling the engine parts to Microsoft.
That captures the dynamic perfectly, and Microsoft clearly recognizes this threat.
Which is why they made Scout?
That is why Scout is so significant. By creating a proactive agent with a persistent identity that lives inside the Microsoft ecosystem, they are trying to lock users in.
They're battling to be the definitive digital colleague.
Exactly. The winner of this arms race gets to define the future architecture of white-collar work.
But giving a piece of software that much autonomy and that much unrestricted access to our sensitive corporate data, I mean, that brings us to an incredibly urgent warning in the report.
Yes.
If we're going to trust these AI agents to act as our coworkers, we have to trust the underlying code they're built on.
Which is a huge assumption.
Right. And right now, that trust is actively being exploited.
This is perhaps the most critical immediate takeaway for anyone listening who works in a modern digital environment.
So listen up, because this is an urgent security alert directly from the Techin Report. If you use the ChatGPT desktop app, the Codex app, or the Atlas app on a Mac,
pay attention to this.
You must update it before June 12, 2026. If you do not update by that exact date, Apple's macOS Gatekeeper will completely brick the applications.
They just won't open.
They will not open. You will be completely locked out.
And the mechanism behind this forced update is really a textbook example of how fragile our global software ecosystem has actually become.
The report calls this breach the mini Shai-Hulud campaign.
Named after the giant sandworms from Dune, of course.
Naturally. And what's wild is that the attackers didn't go after OpenAI's heavily guarded servers directly.
Yeah, that would be too hard.
Right. Instead, they executed what's called a supply chain attack. they compromised a wildly popular open-source JavaScript library called TanStack.
A very common library.
And because OpenAI's apps used that library, two OpenAI employee devices were infected.
The strategy is just brilliant and terrifying in its simplicity.
It's like finding out the flour at a massive commercial bakery was contaminated before a single loaf of bread was even baked.
Right.
You're not attacking the impenetrable vault where they keep the secret recipe. You're just attacking the delivery truck dropping off the raw ingredients.
Precisely.
But I need some jargon defined here. The report says OpenAI had to rotate their code signing certificates, which is why MacOS gatekeepers will brick the apps.
Okay.
I know what password is, but what exactly is a code signing certificate, and what does gatekeeper actually do?
Let's break down the mechanics. Think of a code signing certificate as a digital wax seal on a letter.
Okay, a wax seal.
When OpenAI finishes building an app, they use this cryptographic seal. Now, macOS has a security system called Gatekeeper.
Right.
Whenever you try to open an app, Gatekeeper checks the wax seal. If the seal is unbroken and belongs to a trusted developer like OpenAI, the app opens.
Oh, sense.
If the seal is missing or tampered with, Gatekeeper blocks the app from running to protect your computer.
So because the attackers got into the building through that contaminated flour, the TanStack library, OpenAI, had to throw away their old wax seal because it couldn't be trusted anymore.
That is the exact mechanism. They had to revoke the old certificates and create completely new ones.
Ah, I get it.
That's why the June 12 deadline is a hard stop. On that date, Apple systems will officially recognize the old wax seal as invalid.
Wow.
So if you haven't updated to the new app with the new seal, Gatekeeper will just shut it down.
But it begs the question, why does a company with billions of dollars and massive security resources like OpenAI even use third-party open-source libraries?
It's a fair question.
Why not just write all their own code to avoid this exact delivery truck vulnerability?
It really comes down to the economics and scale of modern software development.
Yeah.
Very few companies write 100% of their own code from scratch.
It would just take too long.
It would take decades to build a modern application. So they rely on a chain of trust. They pull in thousands of third-party dependencies, like TanStack, to handle routine functions.
Like what kind of functions?
Like rendering tables or managing data state, stuff like that. And the attackers knew this. They publish 84 malicious versions across 42 different TanStack packages.
Man. And because developers implicitly trust these established libraries, the malware just slips right past traditional security tools.
Exactly.
It's coming from inside the house.
And that is the terrifying reality. Now, OpenAI caught this relatively early, and they've explicitly stated no user data was accessed.
Well, that's good.
Yes. But they found unauthorized access to internal source code repositories linked to those two infected employee devices.
So it's still a huge deal.
It is a massive wake-up call. I mean, we are rushing to give AI access to our emails, our calendars, our financial data. But the foundation it's built on relies on open-source libraries that are constantly under siege. Cybersecurity isn't just about building a higher wall around your own castle anymore. It's about rigorously inspecting every single brick that gets delivered to the construction site.
Okay, I don't know about you, but between multi-billion dollar lawsuits piercing the corporate veil, the collapse of search engine privacy, autonomous AI coming for our office jobs, and hackers poisoning the code supply chain.
It's a lot.
We have spent this entire deep dive talking about losing control. We are losing control to billionaires, to search algorithms, to agents, and to hackers.
It's a bit bleak when you put it like that.
Right. Which makes our final story delightfully ironic. Because the best way to unwind from all this intense tech reality this fall will be escaping into a reality-bending supernatural video game, literally about taking back control.
Ah, yes. The return to the oldest house. I have been following the development cycle of this one very closely.
Control Resonant. We finally have a concrete release date, September 24, 2026.
It's about time.
Pre-orders are open for $60. The trailer just dropped at PlayStation's State of Play, and we are officially getting the return of Jesse Faden from the original 2019 masterpiece.
So this time, there's a twist with the protagonist.
Yeah, the protagonist is her brother, Dylan Faden.
Yep.
And they are teaming up to fight the Hiss, this hostile reality-altering force.
You know, Remedy Entertainment has such a remarkably unique approach to narrative and world building.
Oh, are you a fan of the brutalist architecture?
The oppressive concrete aesthetic is brilliant, yes.
It really is.
But it goes deeper than the visual art direction. It's how they build a bizarre, supernatural world with its own rigid internal logic.
Yeah, it feels real even when it's crazy.
The original Control was a masterclass in atmospheric storytelling. And the fact that Dr. Casper Darling is returning is a fantastic detail.
The live-action scientists and all those educational videos scattered around the game.
Yes. Those videos were crucial to the game's tone. They delivered essential exposition, but also deepened the absolute weirdness of the Federal Bureau of Control.
They were so unsettling.
They really were. It's also worth noting from a technical standpoint, Remedy is releasing this simultaneously across PS5, Xbox Series X, and S, PC, and very rarely for a day one release of this magnitude macOS.
Wait, I thought Macs were notoriously difficult to build massive graphic-intensive games for.
They traditionally have been, yeah. Largely because Apple uses its own proprietary Metal Graphics API rather than the industry standard DirectX.
Right, which Windows and Xbox use.
Exactly. So for a studio to dedicate the resources to optimize a demanding next-gen physics engine for macOS for a simultaneous day one launch that shows immense confidence in their technical pipeline.
Oh.
It's going to be a massive showcase for the hardware.
Well, it's going to be a massive fall release to cap off a wild year in tech.
Hmm.
But let's bring it all back home. We've covered an unbelievable amount of ground today.
We really have. And the through line is unmistakable. It really paints a picture of an industry in the middle of a massive paradigm shift regarding authority and trust.
We started with Elon Musk's emails being dragged into the light, exposing how interconnected and legally perilous tech empires have become when the corporate veil gets pierced.
Right.
We saw everyday users staging a 95% privacy rebellion on DuckDuckGo, refusing to let Google's AI dictate their reality or force-feed them answers.
The smoothie analogy.
Yep, the weird smoothie. We watched Microsoft and OpenAI race to build the ultimate 24/7 digital coworker, blurring the line between software and employee.
A very thin line now.
And we learned that the very code making all this possible is terrifyingly vulnerable to supply chain attacks, prompting an urgent mandate. So first of all, if you were listening to this on a Mac and you use ChatGPT or Codex,
please pause this right now.
Pause it right now and go update your apps. Seriously, get that new digital wax seal. Secondly, you are now fully equipped to sound like the smartest person in your next office meeting.
Well, the landscape is quite literally shifting under our feet. And as we embrace these new autonomous tools, this raises an important question.
Lay it on us.
We talked about Microsoft Scout being hired as a digital assistant, right?
Yeah, that specific wording.
But consider the legal framework of our society. We have spent centuries building corporate law around human liability.
Okay.
If a human employee makes a mistake, we have established protocols. But as companies deploy persistent autonomous AI agents to do real work, what happens when that AI makes a catastrophic business error on its own?
Like what?
Like what happens when it hallucinates a fact in a public shareholder report or commits copyright infringement while autonomously drafting a marketing campaign at 3 a.m?
Wow. Who gets fired? Who pays the fine?
Exactly. The law has absolutely no idea who to put in handcuffs or who to sue when the employee is a string of code acting independently on a cloud server.
Man.
The technology has leaped years ahead of our legal frameworks.
And that is something to chew on as these digital coworkers start showing up in our chat channels. The hammer isn't just swinging itself anymore. We don't even know who to blame when it breaks the window.
Very true.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious. Check your software updates. And we'll see you next time as we continue to unpack the future, one source at a time.